So I was informed that I forgot an announcement. Ethan was back there dancing like a fool trying to get me to remember, and I didn't remember. Hey, tomorrow is Bring Your Bible to School Day. So take your Bible, take it to school, show it off to all your friends, tell them why you have it, tell them what you believe, you know, all those good things that go along with that, right? Maybe. Okay, then I got a question that goes along with that, okay? So, do you know somebody who acts one way around one group of people and another way around another group of people? Maybe. Now, I understand that that's none of you in this room. That's why you're all going to walk around with your Bible duct taped to your chest, proudly showing it off tomorrow. But you might know somebody like that, okay? So how does this happen? How is it that somebody goes from somebody who on a Wednesday or a Sunday looks like they love Jesus to somebody that really and truly you don't even know? Somebody that claims to know Christ, claims to follow Christ, and then the next day it looks like they have no faith at all. Nobody knows. Do we not know the answer, or were we not paying attention? Bit of both. Okay, I'll ask you. How does it happen that we go from somebody that will sit here on a Wednesday night or on a Sunday morning and act like they love Jesus, claim to be a follower of Christ, and yet the next day it's as if they have no faith at all? All right, people are fake. Yep. Yeah. They don't want to what? Get out of the boat? Yep. All right, so what'd you say? Pressured by family. Oh, okay. So I feel like to some extent this is kind of all of us. Like, we do certain things and we put on our church face, and then, like, the next day we kind of get home and we hang out with friends or family, and things seem to change even just a little bit. Like, it's almost as if we just can't be 100% real with every single person that we're around. So I wonder this, how real is our faith if we're afraid to take it everywhere we go? Like, are we actually following Jesus, or are we just following people that are wanting us to follow Jesus? Nobody knows. All right, good. So tonight we're going to look at probably, in my opinion, one of the saddest stories in the entire Bible. Okay, so it comes from the Old Testament. We don't go there very often. It's the story about a king named Joash. Now, it's in the book of 2 Chronicles. And before we go there, let me explain something to you. 1 and 2 Chronicles are the same stories as 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Samuel. So why in the world is there a need to write both? Okay, basically it works out like this. 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Samuel are written kind of as things are happening. So it's almost like watching the news. You know, something happens and you're watching the news and you're watching like that car chase go on, and so it's like live footage, like this is going on, oh, they're going to catch him, oh, he's going to crash. The books of Chronicles are written after the fact, and so you get kind of the ideas behind what was going on. It's more like watching like a documentary on the History Channel. So we're going to look at it from that perspective tonight. All right, so go to 2 Chronicles 24. Hey, honey, you love me a whole lot, right? You love me a whole lot, right? Can you go get my drink out of my bag? Two Chronicles 2:4. Second Chronicles chapter 24. That's okay. All right. I'm waiting on my magic Superman juice and then we'll get started. Are you dancing or walking slowly?
Walking slowly.
We can put on some music and you can dance. I'll have Christian put on a beat, and you can dance. All right, so starting in verse 1, that's where we're going to be. So Aaron's got to get to 2 Chronicles. Hang on, I was in the wrong one. I said Aaron told y'all 2 Chronicles 10 times. Hey, it's okay. They don't pay me to be smart. They pay me to talk, okay? All right, so here we go. Joash was 7 years old when he became king. He reigned in Jerusalem 40 years. His mother was Zibiath from Beersheba. Joash did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight throughout the lifetime of Joiada the priest. So, can you imagine being king at 7 years old? Like, all the candy in the world. Tristan's like, I'm in. Where do I sign? Back in time. Here we go. So, in the United States, you have to be at least 35 years old to even become president. Obviously, the guy set up the country said, you know what? You have to be a little mature, and you have to be wise, and you have to have some life experience before you can make decisions that impact an entire country. That's not how it worked in these times, okay? What happened was, if your dad was the king and he died, it went to, like, your mom. If she died, it went to the oldest sibling, older, you know, so on and so forth down the line. Well, basically, his dad, his mom, and all of his older siblings were terrible rulers, and they all died. So at 7 years old, they're like, hey, you're it. Like, what does a seven-year-old do with, like, a massive kingdom? Run around? Like, for real, I'm with Tristan going, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to institute a new offering program. You all have to bring me 90% of your candy every day. Like, you know, pay your taxes in candy, right? So, what had happened is, because obviously they realized a seven-year-old doesn't know how to reign, they gave him kind of a mentor. This mentor was the priest, Joadiah. Okay? So that's where we're sitting at. And in the time that he was king, Joash did some pretty crazy stuff. Like, he rebuilt the kingdom, or the temple, I mean, had a revival, led pretty well. Again, it says he did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight. Okay? So let's skip down to verse 15, and we'll pick this up as it kind of lays this out. So it says, Joadiah lived to a very old age, finally dying at 130. I don't want to live that long. I'm just saying. So, he was buried among the kings in the city of David because he had done so much good in Israel for God and his temple. But after Joadiah's death, the leaders of Judah came and bowed before King Joash and persuaded him to listen to their advice. They decided to abandon the temple of the Lord, the God of their ancestors, and they worshipped Asherah, poles and idols instead. Because of this sin, divine anger fell on Judah and Jerusalem. Yet the Lord sent prophets to bring them back to him. The prophets warned them, but still the people would not listen. So basically, the entire time that Joadiah is there, this father figure, this mentor, Joash did everything he could to please God. Right? Was he actually trying to please God? No? Why? Yeah, like he was doing everything he could to please the priest, his mentor, his father figure. And so once that priest dies, he's like, now I don't know what to do. He was kind of stuck. He was left to his own decisions. He never had his own personal relationship with God. It was always this middleman, this pathway through the priest that had to go there. So he began following these other people. We've got, you know, the leaders of Judah came before him. He began to follow them and taking their advice. He wasn't really taught and trained how to be that individual person that had his own thought process and beliefs. Okay? So, down to verse 20. There we go. So, the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Joadiah the priest. He stood before the people and said, "This is what God says. Why do you disobey the Lord's commands and keep yourselves from prospering? You've abandoned the Lord, and now he's abandoned you." Then the leaders plotted to kill Zechariah, and King Joash ordered that they stone him to death in the courtyard of the Lord's temple. That was how King Joash repaid Jehoiada for his loyalty, by killing his son. Zechariah's last words as he died were, "May the Lord see what they are doing and avenge my death." So the priest's son even shows up and he's like, "Hey, stop being dumb." Does he listen? Nope. He's like, "I'm going to keep doing what I want to do, and you're going to die. This is a good plan. I don't know why, but the people around me who are probably stupid keep telling me that this is a good plan." So, as you can imagine, things start going very badly from here on out. Because if you look at the next heading, right below verse 22, it says what? What? Invasion of Judah. Okay. What does yours say, Troy? Josiah assassinated. What does yours say, Emily? The end of Joash's reign. So basically, he kills the son of his mentor, and the next step in this is, hey, your reign is over, bro. Like, end of story. So, verse 25, we're going to jump down there. The Arminians withdrew. Okay, there's this battle going on. The Arminians withdrew, leaving Joash severely wounded. But his own officials plotted to kill him for murdering the son of Jehoiada, the priest. They assassinated him as he lay in bed. Then he was buried in the city of David, but not in the royal cemetery. So his mentor, who's actually not a king, gets buried in the royal cemetery, and this guy doesn't because he's acting stupid. So this whole story starts out super promising. I mean, literally, the beginning of this, come on, says, verse 2, Joash did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight. I mean, if that could be written on our tombstone, we'd be good. I mean, literally, if your tombstone read, "Danica did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight," I think you're good. That's where it was headed. The problem was, he was a fake follower. Like, he wasn't actually following God. He wasn't doing what God wanted him to do. He wasn't trying to please God. He was trying to please this mentor that he had. He cared more about the people around him than about actually knowing God. And in the end, the people he cared about impressing so much did what? What? They killed him. Yeah. I mean, it's literally insane. His own officials plotted to kill him for murdering the son of Jehoiada. These are the same people that up in verse 21, it says, then the leaders plotted to kill Zechariah. Like, they're literally saying, "Hey, bro, you should kill that guy." And then after he kills him later on down the road, they're like, "We're going to kill you for killing that guy that we told you to kill." Do what? I don't know. I wasn't there. But Is this not how our friends play sometimes? Yeah. I mean, it's like, hey, we're going to be friends over here, but then there's like a party going on and you don't get invited. Or like, it's time to play a sport in like PE and you're still like the last one picked. And you finally realize that they care more about whether you can actually play soccer than whether you're friends or not. Maybe that was just me. No? So, go to James 4:4. James, Fofo, old, like last tenth, new, keep going, all like last tenth of the Bible. After. Yeah, wait, which John? There's five. Everybody's wrestling with that in his head. There's five? There's only four. There's five. John, first, second, third, Revelation. Seminary joke. John wrote Revelation. That the full title of the book usually is The Revelation of John Through Jesus Christ. Anyway, all right, so we're all there. Somebody give a page number for those that aren't there.
736.
736, okay. So, somebody read James 4:4. Read it loud. Or maybe you don't want to because it might be embarrassing. But read it loud. Well, that makes it pretty clear, doesn't it? Like, you've got to make a decision. Either you're going to be a friend of the world or a friend of God. So, what is it that about us that makes us willing to lose out on so much just to impress somebody else? All right, let me give you this example. You've probably never seen this before. But maybe you have. Have you ever seen that guy or that girl that finds that guy or girl that they just fall in love with? It's this magical time. And their friends tell them, hey, that's probably not the right person for you. You probably shouldn't be with them. And so then that boy or that girl starts making them decide, hey, either you're going to hang out with us or you're going to hang out with them. And one by one, their friends start to fade away. Have you ever seen that before? So, we're just going to assume that everybody in the room has seen something like that before. So, if the person in your story, don't point fingers at her. It's not very nice. So, let's just assume that everybody in the room has seen that kind of person. I want you to raise your hand if you can tell me that the person that left all their friends for that boy or girl, if they're still together.
No.
They really did get married after they left all their friends? Okay. You got one, they left all their friends and they're like still together now? How long? Oh, okay. All right, so either way, in a room of like 15 people, there's like two. Normally, we know how this story goes, right? They dump all their friends, and then 2, 3, 4, 6 months down the road, they break up. And now you're like, oh, crap, where are all my friends? Right? Isn't this how this goes down? 11 months. Okay, wait. That's what I did to Emily. When I got with her, I was like, you need to make all your friends go away, girl. That's how that went down. Not really. She just got rid of all our friends because they were immature. So what makes us willing to lose out on so much? I mean, normally you're sitting there going back to your friends groveling, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. So why do we lose out on so much to impress somebody that really doesn't matter? Like whether it's a friend or a boyfriend, girlfriend, why do we do this to ourselves? We really like them. We don't care what people think. So, I mean, it's easy to sit and look at Joash and be like, what an idiot. The guy in the story? Joash is my best friend that we've been talking about the whole time. Mariah, I love you. So, like I said, sometimes it's easy to look at Joash and be like, dude, what an idiot. Like, why would you do something so dumb? You've got everything going so well for you. But don't we act the same way? Like, obviously they're over there pointing the finger at Selena, so we're not going to point any fingers at Selena, okay? We're just going to use her as an example for a second. But why would she take and decide to date this boy and make all her friends go away for a silly boy? Oh, she did it. Oh. So, y'all have heard me today before, like, first of all boys are silly and they're not worth it, right? Boys, shake your head. Yes, we're all silly and we're not worth it. Okay, good. What? No, we're talking about Joash. Tristan's like, what? Oh, my goodness. So, here's my thing. Here's the deal. Tonight, okay, we all sit in this room. We put on our church face. We put on our church language. As soon as these people are gone, as soon as we leave this building, we become the kind of person that the next group wants us to be. Whether that's our family or the people we're going to go eat with or the people in our neighborhood or whatever. And then you get to school and in first period, you look like this group of people. And in third period, you look like this group of people. Are we ever actually ourselves? When? When we're in a room by ourselves? When you're asleep? Oh, my goodness gracious. So, if you had to look and answer in that group, let's say on average you were five different people during the day. Which one's the real you? None? Is it possible that the answer really is none? That all five of them are masks that we wear because we're afraid of who that somebody might find out who we really are? Like, isn't this how it works? Okay. So here's the deal. There's nothing wrong with wanting to emulate somebody. Okay? Paul even said, follow me. Oh, no. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. So there's nothing wrong with trying to emulate or imitate somebody. But in that process, don't spend your life, don't waste your life trying to please that person if there's no eternal value in that. Like, at some point, the real you is going to come out. You're going to date that guy or that girl, and you're going to fall in love, and you're going to get engaged, and you're going to move in together, and then the real you is coming out. And they're going to be like, you can get out of my house. Okay, you can't hide behind the masks forever. So, hey, y'all stop thinking about moving in together right now. My goodness. So, what would happen legitimately if right now, tonight, we decided to stop being different people around every different group of people that we're with. And we decided that we were actually going to follow God no matter what anybody else thought. We were actually going to pursue Him. We were actually going to imitate Him and what He wants out of our lives, no matter what the cost, no matter what anybody else thought. What would our lives be like? Sad? All right. On that note, take that question, take it into your small groups, and y'all discuss, what would life be like if we decided to stop caring about what everybody else thought, start living for Jesus and nothing else? Break.